Welcome back to Entertainment Talk. Today I'm here to do another video game review. This is going to be for one Claire Obscure Expedition 33. It's finally time to talk about this game. I'm your host Matthew, and let's go to our rating system. We've got strong must play, don't skip, possible skip, and hard skip. Let's not waste any time. This is obviously a strong must play and a 10 out of 10 with a little bit of a round of applause towards Sandful Interactive, which is the French studio that developed this game. We've been talking about this game on Gaming Talk for a couple of weeks, because I've been playing it on there, of course, and Robert talked about it a couple of months ago when it actually came out. It's been so interesting for me, kind of. I don't know if I mentioned, by the way, we're starting out spoiler-free, so don't worry about that. It's been so interesting to see kind of my journey with this game, in the way of it came out and it wasn't that I didn't want to play it. I think I was doing my Naughty Dog project at the time, back in April. I was playing all of Naughty Dog's PlayStation games anyway. And then the game came out and it got some praise, then it got some more praise, then it got some more praise, and I started, you know, things pick up some praise, you start to look into things. And then Robert played it, he gave it some praise, other people kept playing it, they kept giving it praise, and the conversation started sparking up about, okay, this is probably one of our first early Game of the Year contenders. It absolutely is. And then I finished my Naughty Dog project thing, finished, you know, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, went through a couple of things. I wanted to kind of, you know, clear my plate a little bit of games before I jumped into this very big game. And played, you know, South of Midnight, already reviewed that kind of thing. And then finally stepped into this game, and I'm very grateful and very thankful that, because sometimes you hear a lot of hype about something, right? Even something that you yourself are interested in, which I was interested in this game anyway. And I remember in the first week or so I played it, I didn't get like a terrible amount of time, but I had like the first few hours and I thought, like, okay, we're still in kind of, you know, tutorial stage, you know, getting to learn some stuff, which there's a lot of stuff to learn in this game. And already, even though in the first couple of hours I'm like, okay, I can't quite see the, I'm not there yet on the sort of, oh my god, 10 out of 10, game of the year, you know, strong must play, etc, etc. Even though I wasn't there yet, because it was clearly very early, I could already see the seeds of why people had said that. Like, I could see kind of, not story-wise, but like where this game was going, and I could see the seeds of why people loved this game so much. And then pretty much from there right through to the end of my experience with the game, I think 30 hours later, it just kept getting better and better and better and better, and just didn't stop being incredible. This is one of them easy ones where it's like incredible, amazing, groundbreaking, phenomenal, any of those words you want to use, they all apply. They're all, you know, excellent choices. But it's just like, sometimes you can just tell when a studio is not only really enjoying making what they've made, like you can see the passion, but when you can tell that a studio loved making what they made, and there's just the heart and the soul in this game. And this feels so far from like the corporate dross that we get, like it's just at the complete other end. It's just this amazing passionate sort of like passion project from these people, from Sandful. I think it's only a development studio of 30 people is what I read somewhere, which is like, if 30 people can make this, then it's good to know that we as humans are capable of doing things like this still. But just this passion project, and how it kind of came to life, and it's just a really, really lovely and really, really amazing story of just what this game is, how it came to be, my journey with it. I remember Robert kept saying to me, I think he said it on and off mic as well, he's like, oh, I hope I haven't, like, built this up for you too much, or that sort of thing. And just gradually, as we were having the conversations on Gaming Talk, like after he'd played it, and as I was going through my journey with it in the what are we playing section, and every week when he could tell that I was enjoying it more, because like I said, the game was just getting better and better, and he's like, oh, I'm glad I didn't sort of like oversell this to you. And I would flick between he either equally sold this game, or not to his fault, but like not undersold the game. It's just, I don't know, even kind of slightly, not by like massive margins, because I did have high expectations for this game, and those expectations only got higher the more that I heard, which again can be, well, to use the word dangerous is a bit dramatic, but it can be a little bit dangerous, because it's sort of, yeah, you're really, really excited for something, you hear loads of good, great stuff about it, and then you go and play it. But yeah, sold it incredibly well, let's say. But like, yeah, it's just, I don't only think this is, because I could sit here right now and say this is my game of the year, even though I've only played, oh, I've just started Death Stranding 2, but only finished two games this year so far, because I was doing that Naughty Dog project. But can clearly and very easily see why this is people's games of the year. I would actually push that even further. I think this is one of the generation's best games. And I know there's been a lot of comments about like the PS5 Series X generation and how at times it's been excellent, but there's been, you know, live service stuff, remakes, remasters, you know, it's a bit of a weird generation. But I would quite comfortably put this in the top five of, you know, the PS5 Series X's best generation of games. I would quite comfortably do that. I just think there's so much here that works. There's just so many just incredible ideas, which I'll break them down. Of course, I've got my notes here. Break them down as we go through, just category by category in a minute. I'm just kind of doing my preamble, I suppose. But damn, it's just, it's also just like a really beautiful game as well. I don't mean visually. And it just, yeah, it's really, really quite incredible. So yes, so far, love it and recommend it, definitely. But yeah, what was the other thing I was going to say here? So not to like take an opportunity here to dig at other studios, but I'm going to take an opportunity here to dig at other studios. The way I've been talking about this game here for the first 10 minutes or so, and like how much of an achievement this game is, the story behind it, the hype, etc., etc., I've already gone through all of that. And you do look at a game like this and go, right, this is like a once-in-a-generation kind of passion project, small team, indie team kind of thing that just, like, comes out with something out of nowhere almost. And sometimes you can't help but look at, there's probably more than three, but Ubisoft, EA, Activision right now, especially Ubisoft, we've been talking about them a lot on Gaming Talk. You wish you could make a game like this. You wish you could make a game like this, because those kind of studios just can't make something like this at the moment. And the ironic thing about that is, even if you had, because you can't always blame the developers for the state of certain games, there's a lot of corporate stuff that goes into games, obviously. I would almost see this as like, let's say someone pitched this to EA or Ubisoft, probably the worst of those three at the moment. If someone pitched this to something like Ubisoft, you could see them almost like blocking a game like this because they'd want like some live service thing or, you know, something like that. So it just wouldn't happen at a studio like this. They still now, those three studios now and again still come out with great games, but not, I can't remember, especially with EA, Ubisoft, Activision, the last time you made something as special as this. It's been a long time since you have. And it's just really great to see this passion project not be, you know, clawed back or held back by some, you know, corporate nonsense. It's just really, really, really wonderful. So all right, let's go category by category here to kind of, there's a lot to talk about, to kind of concentrate my own thoughts and stuff. I start off with the music in this game, which was one of the massive things that come out. I have downloaded or purchased whatever three of the songs. Which ones are they called? Let me just check. There's original soundtrack. And then there's his original soundtrack, says Alicia and Gustav. There's two of the songs that are like quite similar, but there's like different versions of them and that. But anyway, I brought three of the original soundtrack songs. That's when you know you really, really like something. When you go and, like, before you've even finished the game, you go and buy the music for it. This game is quite comfortably groundbreaking. I mean, it's... And it's not just, oh, it's got a really great, you know, the actual theme, the soundtrack thing. It's not just like the menu music is really great. It's both a case of, like, across the board, whether it's the music in the game, the music in cutscenes, the music in the battle, the music when you're walking around. It's got this, like, really incredible soul to it where no matter where you are, whether it's like you're walking through this amazing world, and I'll talk about the environment in a minute, you're walking through this amazing world, whether it's the in-level parts or the open world parts, the music fits the mood everywhere perfectly, whether it's your characters going through a stroll, you encounter a battle, there's like slightly different songs in battles, it's not the same one each time, you get different scores for different bosses, which fit those really well, you of course do have the menu music, which is just a delight to listen to every single time. You got like the slightly, I think you got like the orchestral version of the soundtrack, and then the other version, and I think there's like three versions of it, but anyway, I think those are the ones that I bought. And then, like, if I had to close the game down for some reason, and then, you know, come back to it, and you get booted into the main menu music, it's almost one of them games as well where, okay, you want to get on with it and play it because it's an amazing game, but you want to, like, sit there and listen to the soundtrack and stuff. Like, you want to sit on the main menu for a moment and sort of almost give yourself reasons not to press, you know, continue. But... See, I think it's interesting when you look at, so say, RPGs, right? And you get, like, let's say something like Final Fantasy. Now, when you play a game like a Final Fantasy or, like either an RPG or a JRPG, whatever, and you get, like, a big dramatic boss who's got, like, an enormous sword and they're flipping around all over the place, sometimes I find, now, I don't play a ton of those games, but I've had a good enough sample size to know kind of what's up. I feel like sometimes those games try almost too hard to give you something really, really dramatic, and in terms of the music, and it feels kind of like you're trying too hard to up the sort of the epicness and up the ante of it. But I think this game does it perfectly. It's one of the ones, actually. I remember, what was it? I was in one of the boss fights, and noticed that, okay, the sound was at a good level, and then because I have this like slider on my headphone thing, I slid it just slightly. I didn't like have it blasting out, but slid the audio up just slightly, and the music just went at that. It was loud, but not like too loud. It wasn't blaring out or anything. And even just doing something like that, and just kind of cranking the music up for the game, and then having this epic boss fight combined with how good the game looks and the characters and, you know, everything else. Again, this is a case of, you have a combination of so many incredible things, but like they each kind of take their turn to stand out. But because yeah, when you're in the boss battles and stuff, or even just some of the normal battles, the music there stands out arguably more and feels epic because you're in an epic situation. But again, I don't feel like it tries too hard to do that. But then even when you're going through this really beautiful world, and there's like the more calm music or the sort of sadder music or whatever it might be, all the sort of music in the cutscenes, it all just fits really perfectly. And it's been a while since, like, I mean, I've got like a chunk of video game soundtracks on my phone and stuff, as well as, you know, music from artists and stuff outside of games. I've got plenty of music on there. But like, yeah, it just fit everything perfectly, and it's just, the music in this game is just simply absolutely groundbreaking. It's just absolutely incredible. I don't even know, see, I could sit here and say, like, okay, you pick one of the three versions of the main theme, because that's the best music, but then if you show me some boss music from, like, one of the battles, because I don't remember every single song in the game, but if you showed me that, I'd be like, no, that's really epic as well. So it's just, as much as, yeah, the main theme does stand out, I suppose, because it's, like, the one at the top or whatever, It just fit incredibly well. It was just absolutely outstanding, and I'll continue. It will become one of them ones where now that obviously I'll still be thinking about this game after I do this podcast, because it's just one that's going to stay in the memory quite easily. But like when I go to listen to the songs, and I'll be thinking about the different scenes and the combat and the characters. So it's just absolutely incredible. So I think that's the music covered. Let's go to the environment next. Now, this game did something to me that games don't usually do to me. Now, whether this is your first podcast, 5th, 50th, 200th, I don't know. I'm not somebody who, when it comes to, okay, I'm going to play a new video game, and granted, I want different things from different genres of games. Like, when I play a Call of Duty, I'm not expecting the same thing as Expedition 33. But usually when it comes to games, okay, I want the game to you know, play well, be enjoyable to the degree that it's supposed to, whether it's supposed to be fun, scary, action-filled, or whatever. And then, of course, I want it to be performing very well, because you don't want, you know, a stuttery bad game. Graphics are always at the bottom of my list. Now, it's not that I'm someone who will go, oh yeah, I recognize that this part of this game looks really good, and I'll look at it for 5 seconds and look away. So I'll admit that that's wasted on me. I'm not somebody who, I don't really use like photo mode in games. I don't like take screenshots of stuff that much, unless it's a particular moment maybe. I don't really do that kind of thing. This is the first game maybe ever, honestly, the first ever that I, whether it's again the individual areas or the open area or whatever it is, I didn't do it in the campsite as much, but anyway. And because where it matters to me more, like, I don't really care if the water looks good, or the rocks look good, or the grass looks good, or the blue sky looks good, or the cloth on a character's jacket looks good, or a beard looks good. Although the hair, that being said, the hair graphics and hair physics in this game are amazing. I noticed when you're, particularly with Mayel, because she's got longer hair, I noticed when you click on one of her menus and she spins around, like her hair spins back around the same way. I noticed that a couple of times. Anyway, I'm not somebody who really cares about that much. So like if I end up playing a game, even in today's day and age, that I really, really enjoy, but it doesn't look that great, I won't like knock a game's score down for that, because it doesn't really, I'll notice if a game's particularly ugly, let's say, like, oh god, like, it, you know, whether it's draw distance problems or, you know, something like that, I'll notice that. But and I will give a game, if it looks particularly ugly, I'll point that out, because that's just like, okay, you didn't do your basic job of making your game look, you know, decently pleasant to look at, I suppose. But yeah, this is the first time in a game for, again, maybe forever, that I've actually kind of, you know, been navigating the world and stuff. And it's not the case of, again, you know, the things look really good. It's a case of, look at the design of this game and the world building. I love things like world building and like environmental storytelling and that kind of stuff, but when there's a lot of things in this game that are like floating, and because of the state of, like, you know, what happens with the expeditions and all those sorts of things, it's trying to tell you a story that way. And I just stood and looked at those things, and okay, you didn't get a direct answer as to, okay, there's a ship that's wrecked below the London Eye or whatever it was, maybe not the actual London Eye, but like one of the Ferris wheel, that's what it's called, isn't it? There's like a broken ship floating below a Ferris wheel, or something similar to that. Like that's, although I'm not going to get the direct answer as to what's happened there, it's cool to look at that and just wonder, like, to let the imagination kind of flow in that way. It was just really, really fun. You're like looking around in the sky and you're just seeing these, you know, things floating around, or you're seeing these massive enemies in the distance, and even on the ground as well, when things have, like, you know, particular colors to them, or it's got a very, very deliberate design to it. And although you do have a run button when you're running around, and I did still use that, I've never I'm trying to think, yeah, the last time I've done it. I don't think I've ever done that in a game, which is actually, like, stop the character, walk around a little bit, and actually just, like, look around at the sky and sort of take it in. I don't think I've ever done that in a video game before. I've done it maybe in a different way in The Last of Us, but in The Last of Us, it's like, how did this building get, you know, specifically damaged or... you know, something like that, but that doesn't do its environmental storytelling in the same way. That will have, like, you climb through a broken window and there's a shotgun, a note, a skeleton on the floor, and it will have things placed in a certain way. That's a little bit, and I love both versions of those environmental storytelling things, but they're done in very different worlds. But just that, I just love that idea of you walk past a previous an area where an event has happened, and you're just left to, not in a cliffhanger like bad sense, but you're just left to wonder, like, what happened here? How did it happen? And although you'll never really get an answer, although in The Last of Us you can read notes, and in here you can listen to the left behind, like, not tapes, there's these little, like, echo kind of things, where was it, you can listen to, like, recordings from previous expedition members. That's kind of how it does some of its storytelling. So it kind of does that as well, and they kind of explain that in certain ways. So I just thought that was really, really, really incredible. Something I forgot to mention, but I still obviously could, in terms of environment and how the game looks, and obviously I'm kind of talking about the game's DNA, I love how French this game is. Obviously, it's from, it does say here, Claire Expedition 33 is a 2025 role-playing video game developed by French studio Sanfal Interactive and published by Kepler Interactive, so done by a French studio. Which leads me to come away with one very clear opinion, which is whether it's TV, because I've watched a few different French shows. Some of them have been pretty good. Don't think I've seen many French films, though. But for French video games, at least for Sanfal, you guys know what you're doing. And I think we need more French material. I mean, what do most of us consume? American content is the biggest out there. Obviously, you've got a lot of, like, K-dramas, Korean dramas, things like that. Which those can be very, very good as well. Seen a lot of good, like, horror Korean stuff out there. Obviously, you've got your British shows, which... Okay, I relate to British shows in a certain way, but it's not different from me, because I am British. But, yeah, you don't see... Maybe it's just me, but you just... specific for video games, you don't see a lot of French video games, but there's a certain... There's a certain beauty and a certain really interesting DNA to the way that they've done that here, certainly, and I would... Yeah, love to see more French video games, but also obviously love to see more from Sanfal Interactive. But I just, whether it was, like, you know, the fancy French dialogue, which is always kind of fun, or just, again, the environment, storytelling, the world building and everything here. Because this is kind of like a French world tied in with this sort of bits of fantasy, bits of sci-fi, bits of... There's a lot of bits of things in sort of the DNA of this game that just really make its experience, and that was just really incredible. But yeah, it's just, even in the first couple of hours of this game, like my initial kind of first couple of hours, I was like, I'm actually stopping and looking at this game. And it was just, it was nice to have a bit of a different experience that way, because, okay, someone puts a lamppost or a bin or a postbox or a bench or something in, like... Alright, cool. If there's something on the bench, or there's something hanging from the lamp or something, then cool, that's great. But, and it wasn't even the specific thing in terms of the environmental storytelling, it was just also just what this world looked like and the design of it. It was just really, really, really fascinating and amazing to me, so... let's continue from there. That's pretty much environment covered. Let's go to characters next. I pretty much love all the characters in this game, even the more kind of villainous ones. I'm not sure how much I can actually get into this here without spoilers, but I think it was Eskie and Mael. Those are my favourite two characters. Eskie is the big guy that you can use to navigate the world. I love the writing with his character. And obviously, across the board, voice acting is just... whew, something else. I don't even know who to pick for the best. This is one of them projects where I like don't even know who to pick for the best like motion capture performance or voice acting performance, because almost everybody was really equal. It's like The Last of Us Season 2 to me. Like, Pedro's great, Bella's great, Caitlin's great, Gabriel's great. Everybody's really, really great in the show, and nobody kind of sticks out. Not that that's a problem, but I think when it comes to characters rather than performance... Mael was probably my favorite character, probably next to Eskie. I really, really liked him a lot. Let me just double check that's the correct character. Eskie. Yes, that is him. I thought for a second that might be the other one. Never mind. Yeah, got the name right. Good. but just... there was something really, really, like, he's the sort of support for this group, and he balances that really, really well. And he's not quite got the sort of Knuckles Drax thing, you know, that sort of, like, I have feelings and I'm not sure. And I like that idea. That idea can come off very, very well, particularly, let's say, like, Drax or something from Guardians of the Galaxy. He does do that a little bit, but not quite in the same way. Like, he's aware of what he's doing and everything, and he's not sort of confused in the same way. But, yeah, I thought that character was really, really well-written. Obviously, this entire game is incredibly well-written, but, yeah. See, with a review like this, I don't really need to point out, like, oh, the gameplay was excellent, and these individual bits were excellent, because the whole game is. So, like, if I'm to sit here and say the writing was excellent and the voice acting was excellent, well, obviously... I will get to some balance points in a minute. By the way, I know I'm giving this game a lot of praise, and I do like to be balanced. There's a few things I'm going to point out here in a little bit that they don't take away things from the game, but just little balance points for me. But no, I liked all the characters. I liked kind of obviously all the reveals of them and things like that. But I can't get too much into that kind of stuff here. So there's some great reveals. So really great reveals and things along that line. Let's talk about one of the big ones, which is combat for the game. This has got... now, you want to talk about satisfying combat for video games. Now, okay, RPG, it's a turn-based role-playing video game. The counter/parry, or I guess parry/counter system, is one of the most satisfying things I've done in a video game. Especially when, like, it's great to do it against the normal size enemies, right? Like, they swing their sword, you go doof, doof, and man, I know I've talked about sound and music and stuff, or a little bit about sound. The sound design in this game is incredible as well. Like, the satisfying kind of, like, the doof, doof noise when, like, when an enemy's hitting you and you're like, you're parrying those, and you go one, and then you do, like, you know, maybe it's just one, maybe it's three, maybe it's five, maybe it's, you know, more than that, and you get the little oof and the little click when you're landing those R1s. And especially if the game's like, hey, this enemy's gonna do a five combo thing, and it's like really complicated, and then you land all of them, and as soon as you land that last one, and your characters kind of like jump and twist around in the air and hit back. Like, once you land that last one, you're like, yes, didn't take any damage, I'm gonna hit back at you. And like, the design of that, the sound of that, the satisfaction of just clicking that button at the right point, is just incredible. Especially later on when you do have some like enormous size enemies, and they're like, right, they've got like some massive fists, massive arms, they're like slamming down on you, and you get kind of used to, and there's like little sound cues and stuff like that, and you kind of follow the rhythm of it and everything, and it's just, it's really, really, really satisfying. It just feels absolutely incredible. Especially if you're in like a dangerous situation and you've got like very little health because you messed a few counters up and stuff, and then you just get that. It's not only a pass, because to me, passing in this game is sort of, okay, not quite learning the timings. I'm going to do the dodges. The dodges felt okay to do, but they just felt like more of the safe option. But doing the parries in this game just was incredible. And especially just you build that up, and of course you get AP for doing that. That rolls back into things. And just how all that kind of flows is just absolutely incredible. Especially because you have to hit every parry in a combo to get the counter. So not only is it great when you hit the counter, you hit the enemy back, maybe you hit them with an element or something, that then lands on them, that progresses that, and then, oh look, I've got 7 points now, I've got more options to do things, and you look at what you've got, and that's all really, really excellent. Now, I wasn't the best at, like, I completely understood what the combat system was doing. I got 90% of a grip on it, but I kept making, and this was just on me, this is not on the game, I kept kind of not, like, simple things where it's like, okay, if this enemy's marked, you do more damage, but then, okay, who in your team's got the ability to do that? You do it with them, but you wait for their turn, and then it's like, okay, if an enemy's marked and you hit them with fire, they'll be hit with fire for 2 more rounds. I'm just giving random examples, but like they'll be hit with fire for 2 more rounds, and then that adds up onto that. And then it's like there's ones where, what was it again? You can like affect enemies in certain ways and stun them and things like that. And it was. I didn't find that as satisfying as the counters. Maybe it was because I was just better at doing. Although I wasn't that great at times with it. But I got mostly to grips with sort of who's got what on your team and what's going to add up to what. I did a decent job at it, so I didn't get all the satisfaction out of that, but that's still just a really, really engaging combat system. Or like when one of your really big attacks is like lined up properly, and like, okay, and it's my turn to like do some really, really big damage to this enemy, and you, especially when you kind of hit the, I think it's usually X that you press, I don't remember it being any other button, when the QTE spins around and you hit the perfect whatever, and sometimes it's one, sometimes it's two, sometimes three, and you hit all those and you get the maximum damage, and it just keeps having a really great flow to it. But yeah, I just did find it more satisfying when it was sort of an enemy does like a really annoying attack and you parry it and then you counter it, or you finally learn the timing of an attack, because it won't always just be they go to swing and in 3 seconds they'll hit you, because then they'll do like a spin animation and then, you know, delay their attack, or they'll do two quick attacks and succeed, like a double attack kind of thing, and you've got to just tap it. So I just found a lot more satisfaction with, especially if an enemy's doing like a big splash kind of attack, and like one that attacks the whole group or something, and you time all that, and then like everybody spins around and those kinds of things. Speaking of that, there's one particular moment I can do it spoiler free here. There's one particular moment I want to mention. There was this big boss enemy with like 2 phases, that I obviously killed all the enemies in the game, well, all the main ones anyway, and what was it, you do the end of the second phase, and I think it came up with the victory screen, and then the cutscene was still ongoing and the enemy wasn't dead. And whenever that happened, I was like, oh, is this going to be a case where one of the enemies takes out one of the characters, and then, like, they die afterwards? I kept fearing for all these characters' lives throughout the game, because high stakes and everything. And there was this, for those of you that have played the game and know what I'm talking about, it's one where you're on a bridge, enemy with a sword drops down, you end up falling into this cave-type area, and I think he has 1 sword in the first phase, and then opens up with 2, and then does different combos. You do that, and then you get this full-on, like, Avengers moment, where you get the victory screen, you've killed the enemy, and the enemy goes to get back up and attack or something, and then like this character comes in, does this, and this character comes in, does this, and that was just, that happened 2 or 3 times, but that was probably one of the most satisfying ones. And there was one towards the end of the game which was really, really great as well. But no, that was just absolutely fantastic as well to kind of see that. So combat incredibly satisfying, especially the parry counter system. I got most of the skill tree things unlocked, at least for the three characters I was using. But as Robert pointed out on Gaming Talk, with the two spare characters I had, I didn't quite level them up properly. But that's more on me. So. And then, yeah, just also when you go through the game, you learn new stuff, you get different attacks, and then that just keeps rolling on and on to really satisfying things. So that's the combat covered. I've put, you know, story about loss, grief, and etc. This is where I can get a bit more into some other stuff. I was still quite emotionally affected when things happen in this story. I was expecting slash thinking that was going to happen a little bit more, even though I still, like, when moments hit, moments really, really hit. And it was also kind of, you know, when you finish like a really special game, the credits come up, the excellent music's coming up, you know, there's a couple of wet eyes where I was in those sorts of situations, just because, you know, when an experience just sort of washes over you, and you're like, wow, I just played something really, really special. Not something that was just amazing or excellent, but something just really, really special. And the credits are rolling, the music's playing, you're sitting there thinking about what you've played. You're in the moment like that. I really, really love that kind of bit. But no, the story's fantastic. The loss, kind of grief angle of it is really, really good. Again, I can't really get in too deep with that here, but there were certainly some big moments and big reveals which were really excellent. So I feel they did a phenomenal job with all that. But because I just to kind of say with this, like, thought the story was really, really excellent. I do think the characters were more interesting to me, and that's not a knock against this game, but sometimes it's sort of, you've got kind of your plot, narrative, story, and like your idea of what you're doing, like why the characters are in the world they're in, what they're doing, what they're doing. That was really excellent, but I did enjoy the characters' relationships more, and like seeing them develop individually and seeing them experience the story. I did enjoy that a bit more. And again, that's not a knock against the game. It's just, out of the two things that are kind of the emotional parts of the game, where it's like the characters, the things that happen to them, and then the actual plot and the narrative and the story, I was more affected by, or was more kind of interested in the characters. But because I felt like it did get to a bit of a point where, like, okay, I see kind of where you're going, but I don't know where you're going to end up. Like, I can see what you're sort of trying to do in the story and what you're trying to tell me. And I liked what you're telling me in the story about, like, what's going on with them. But I'm more interested in the characters themselves and how they're going to, first of all, what's going to happen to them. But just what they're going to go do to each other, what they're going to, how they're going to respond to each other's actions. And I was just more interested in that kind of stuff of the game. So I wrote ending here, which I obviously can't talk about in a spoiler way. What do I think of the ending? Can I mention that? No, I'm not going to mention that. I liked the ideas of them, and I don't think, no, I can't mention that here. No, I can't. No. I was going to give my opinion on a particular piece of the ending, but I can't really do that here without going into spoilers or ruining certain surprises or certain things within the game. But I thought the ending was satisfying enough, and certainly poses some interesting moral questions about you as a player, how you might perceive the ending, the characters' choices, obviously, and, you know, what their loss and what their grief does to them. Because I love stories about that kind of thing. It's not always nice, but it's still certainly very interesting. But yeah, that is what I will say about that. I can't really dig into too much of that. without spoiling things. And yeah, that's my spoiler-free section. Clair Obscur Expedition 33. Thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. One that's going to stay in my mind for a bit of time. I'll see if Death Stranding 2 is any better. I only played like the first... I got two deliveries done yesterday. I did put a little clip... I know I haven't put it on YouTube yet. A clip of me falling into water and getting into a bit of trouble. But more on that later. We'll be talking about that later. But that game is pretty good so far, but still very, very early on in that game. So that will probably be my next video game review. Then going to be looking at things like Battlefield 6 eventually. There's obviously Metal Gear Solid as well to play. And there's, I think it's called Ready or Not, or Ready at Dawn, something like that. The new like tactical shooter that's come out. I want to talk about that in some way, shape or form as well. But yeah, Death Stranding 2 is going to take me a minute to get through. So that will be next. But yeah, for those of you that have or haven't played Clair Obscur, I'm just going to say Expedition 33. Expedition 33, did you like it as much as me? Did you like it more than me? I suppose you could like it more than me, but I've given a pretty passionate review about it here. Oh, I forgot the two balancing points, didn't I? I love this game so much that I forgot to do... I'll do that in just a second. If you have any things you didn't like about Expedition 33, maybe you didn't like it. You are allowed to do that. Obviously, it's the, you know, unpopular opinion, but if you didn't like it, tell me why. If you liked it more than me, tell me why. And what did you think of the game itself? Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org, social media, eTalk, Care Entertainment Talk, and his information in your show notes. Just before I get into that, because I genuinely, it was such a small, again, not negative knock against the game, but like, okay, what stuff didn't quite, you know, sit with me right, or didn't quite work with me right, so I'm going to mention those things now. I do think towards the end of the game, because I ended up changing from whatever the middle difficulty was to story difficulty, because some of the timings, and you know, it's not a game problem, it is on me, but you know, I used an accessibility option in the game, didn't cheat, didn't mod it, anything like that. The difficulty option is there for a reason, although still just about got myself through a couple of fights, but those were for some of my own mistakes. I think, which point do I want to touch upon first? I'll do that one first. Some of the combos and some of the sort of here's the big bad enemy thing did get a little too much at the end, but I don't think it quite overstepped its place. And tying in with that, I think the last like 2 hours of the game could have been paced slightly better. It's nowhere near, not even close to the problem that Final Fantasy VII Rebirth has got, which I complained about ad nauseum in terms of why that game's got that problem. It has a lot of you doing a lot of walking, again, through brilliantly designed areas, all that kind of stuff. And there's a... In the last... Not the last boss fight, the third to... It started coming up to me from the third to last boss fight. And you go up and up and up a certain area to get to a certain thing. And I felt like that took a little bit too long to get to, but it's not the same thing of in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth where it's like, oops, this bridge got knocked down. Guess you're going to have to climb this thing and then push this thing and then do this thing. And anyway, let me not go back there. Which is just there for nonsensical reasons. In this game, at least it's a case of, hey, there's enemies here. You can run past these enemies, which I did end up doing. Because I was like, right, I didn't feel like I wanted to get into any more, you know, small scraps. I wanted to get to the boss fight, which, again, you can run there in, you know, like 10 minutes or so from there, which wasn't too much of a bother. But it's not the case of, we're just going to put a bunch of obstacles in your place to pad out the game to make it longer, which is what 7 Rebirth does. In here, it's at least, you're going to run, you're going to do, you know, the grapple climb thing, which I thought was a great mechanic, by the way. You're going to do that, but if you want to grind a little bit more on your way to the boss, you can do this, but you can also run past the enemies as well, if you want to do that. So I was fine with that, but it did take just, and again, I'm kind of scraping the barrel a little bit here for like things that didn't sit quite well with me. But once you get to that bit, and then there's not really too much like run through the area to get to the next thing. And again, it's not got Final Fantasy VII Rebirth's problem of, we're kind of just going to put obstacles in your way to just make the game longer for unknown reasons. It doesn't do anything close to that. Those are my only two kind of issues, sort of, which was, okay, the combos at the end got a little bit like, okay, the timing on these is just really, really tricky. But again, you can flick it to story and you can just do it much more comfortably that way. So that was fine with me. And again, with the other thing I mentioned, you can kind of run through it in not too short space of a time to get to the third to last boss fight. Well, once you do that boss fight, though, I didn't really notice that being a problem after that. So that was fine. What was the other thing I was going to bring up as well? I've forgotten. Couldn't have been an issue then, could it? What was that thing I was going to mention? Oh yeah, boss fight. So I've had this thing recently with, I don't know how many of you have come across this in games that you've played. You've got a boss, and this game completely avoids this problem, which I thought was actually really, really satisfying and really fresh. When you have a boss in a game who's been taunting your character for the entire game, going, I'm going to beat you, I'm better than you, blah, 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 and then you get to the boss fight, you do like a portion of the boss fight, that boss then feels the need to turn into something, you know, like a big phoenix or something like that, and go, haha, I've transformed it into something enormous, and now I'm going to get you. And then you think, okay, why did you need to do that? Because you told me you were big and bad enough to kill me in your original form. But then the other problem that connects to that is some games do it to where, okay, now this boss is, now this big phoenix, and it's not always a phoenix, that's just an example, this big phoenix-esque boss is gonna like give you these ridiculous things to avoid, and the boss fight just becomes nonsensical. This game completely avoids doing that, in my opinion. There's still some big, you know, big waving attacks and stuff, but I didn't feel like it went anywhere near that at all. There's a couple of, you know, tools and equipment and things like that that the bosses used towards the end of the game, but those all felt like they were in line with what that those characters could do, and I was fine with that. It just but that was really good, so thank you for avoiding that, because that's been a big problem for me in games in the last couple of years. So yeah, anyway, that's it for the spoiler free section. We've got some spoilery stuff to talk about still, but I already said how you can write in feedback, all that kind of stuff, so I already mentioned that. There's also of course, yeah, social media, eTalk UK Entertainment Talk, and there's also information in your show notes. Oh, I need to breathe at some point. Alright, if you want to also, I'm going to do the outro here, so spoiler-free people can leave after the outro, and then spoiler-free people can join me on the other side. It'll also give you a chance to shut off the podcast. But if you want to listen to more stuff that we've done, of course, entertainmenttalk.org, podcast platforms, Entertainment Talk for TV, games, films, and United podcast. Didn't do the United cast today, just because it was a 3 o'clock game, and for obvious reasons, I didn't manage to see enough of it. But that will be away for 2 weeks, and then the City game is going to be on TV when we come back, so that won't be an issue for that. So that was when the United cast will return. I might, if I'm up for it, do a transfer wrap-up podcast, because I certainly have some things to say, so, but I'll give myself a bit of time to do that. But anyway, that might happen within the next 2 weeks when the international break is on. Gaming Talk, we're still doing that, of course. Check out that over there. Breaking Bad, we should be back with that for season 4 soon, maybe next week, if not definitely the week after. So look out for that. You can check out our refreshed Breaking Bad podcast for season 3 or seasons 1, 2, and 3. So check those out. Film reviews, still doing those in abundance. Still need to go and see Weapons, so look out for those at some point. But done all the big ones recently. TV reviews, there'll be some more stuff for that, because talked about The Handmaid's Tale recently, finale, so you can listen to that. And then there's also Political Talk episode recently, talking about all the hotel stuff going on in this country as well. Anyway, you can support us by, you know, listening to more stuff. I already told you where you could do that. Word of mouth, social media, let people know about something if they mention what we've podcasted on. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers, ad-free podcast review options, look for that as well if you'd like to. TV and film news, Geek Town Radio Tuesdays, geektown.co.uk. You can look out for Geek Town Radio on Tuesdays, and then, yeah, the news post on geektown.co.uk. And there's YouTube as well, as a few different Expedition 33 videos I've put up, so you can check those out on YouTube, Entertainment Talk Plays. Thanks for listening, and I'll join you on the other side for the spoiler section. See you for that in a minute. Hi there, if you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system which is usually in the bottom right hand corner to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. Alright, it's time for the spoiler section. If you've not played and finished Expedition 33, go and continue the game or start it if you haven't. It's phenomenal and groundbreaking and all the other things I said. So go and play that if you want to listen to this spoiler section. I'm not getting anything particularly written down for this. I think this is going to be a more simple one to cover. Again, it was kind of... It's a two-part thing in terms of, at least for me anyway, in terms of, okay, the number goes down each year, and there's the initial mystery of, why does this happen? Can we stop it? And then there's this mysterious, you know, Paintress, who you constantly see in the background, and this idea of, okay, for some reason, nobody's killed her yet. So therefore, a new number keeps being painted, which means that that age of people, you know, disintegrates, disappears. Kind of Thanos style. And then the number goes down. Obviously, it lands on 33 and you start that one this time. And then that group of people of that age go off and do another expedition. And there's all the DNA bits of, like, what was it? We do it for the ones who come after or something. And then, like, the whole thing about signing your name and stuff, if your group's about to die, which we see a lot of in the audios and things. So it becomes that, and it becomes a case of, okay, you've got to work your way through this world and get up to the Paintress to fight her, but the group are either... The groups that have been sent out are failing this because they keep dying, because the expedition's very hard and there's very difficult enemies. And then because when a year goes by... Again, new number gets painted and people die. And then it becomes a case of this mysterious guy comes along. He's clearly got this history. Who's this, you know, why is there this black and white world and all this sort of thing? Obviously, the mystery breaks down when... what's the guy's name? Ben Starr's... character. I haven't got a cast list here for some reason. You figure out, like, we'll find out, okay, he's got some secrets, and I thought it was going to be like he was going to kill Mael at some point. There was that particular moment, wasn't there? But then it's a case of, okay, they're all actually a family, and because of grief and loss and what's happened, they're painting this fake world and trying to use that for various things. I will admit there was a couple of little narrative threads that lost me, and I don't think it was because of bad writing. I think that they were attempting something that just not all of those came off successfully, but the general gist of, I got the general gist of what was going on, but then it was kind of, is it Alicia and Mael are like the same person? And then, obviously it boils down to the point of, the two endings that you get to choose from, which is, and by the way, I went with Mael's ending because I didn't want to see her die. And Ben Starr's character, oh, I kind of think of his dad, I can think of like everybody else's name, like Loon, Gustave, Renoir, Mael, there was Eskie. I can't think of Ben Starr's character's name. Let me just quickly look it up. Ben Starr. Verso, there we go. Yeah. Verso's character, how he was kind of the son, and he was the sort of, he's the connecting piece in this story, isn't he, between our, I guess, painted characters that we start with, and then what's going on with the expedition. Now, they dug deep enough into the story and into what was going on, but I just, I don't know if it's a case, and I'm not trying to sit here and say like it was a letdown or it wasn't as grandiose as it should have been, or because I didn't really need much more from it. I just ended up caring more about, once the situation became clear and the sort of answers as to, okay, this is what's happened and why. Once it got to that reveal and sort of the cards were being more laid on the table, I just became more interested in, now that the reveals are happening, what is everybody going to do about it and who is going to come out of the situation alive? And it boiled down to me in terms of, okay, you're asking me to choose between Verso and Mael, and I'm picking Mael. See, the interesting thing to me about the two different endings is, okay, so one of them is all of the painted characters, who are the ones that you grow to know and love at the start, they all kind of go away, but they were never real, in quotes, because they were painted, but then they still lived lives and had emotions and feelings and whatever. It boiled down to that, and then it was, okay, the family that caused this, again, through grief and loss and all that sort of thing, is going to stay alive. Now, I don't think there's actually a correct, because games sometimes have like, okay, make this choice, one's a good ending, one's the bad ending, or it will have, you've made these choices through the game, it will boil down to this. So, you know, a bad ending where lots of people die or whatever, or people are condemned to a life of whatever, or a good ending where it's a good ending. Both of these have got good and bad things to them, which I actually do quite like that, because both of them have got pros and cons. Now, I ended up, I guess I like Mael's ending more, even though it sort of, it keeps everybody alive, everybody that at least I've cared about, because in terms of Renoir, the Paintress, and their family, I, again, understood, it's important that when you get presented with villains, in quotes like that, that you understand why they've done what they've done, and that they're not just, not that you can go from a villain that's mustache twirly, like a Dr. Cortex, to one that's got, you know, a flawed way of viewing things. It's not like there's one or the other, there's versions in between. But it was, okay, what you're doing is bad, but you're doing it for reasons because of grief and loss, and because you don't want to face, you know, like the truth. But I would much rather, see, while you could look at me there and go, okay, but in the painted Mael ending, she's condemned to a life of being lonely and kind of empty because of the whole soul thing, and Verso's there, but he doesn't want to do music, so that's not great. But then, because I get what the other ending is supposed to be in terms of they're being put peacefully to rest by being erased because then none of their lives were happy. But then it's, okay, Verso's dead in, like, he's like in, because they show the grave, don't they? He's like in the grave. There's the version of, is it Amy or whatever it is, Mael, who, she's the other version, which that was never the version that I got connected to, even when they tried to explain the whole double... not personality, the whole thing there, they tried to explain that. But then you have the Paintress and Renoir who get sort of, okay, we have to stop painting, we have to say goodbye to everybody. And Verso's dead, like he's in the grave, dead. But is that a good thing? Because then that means everybody else, like Lune that I loved, and Gustave that I loved, although Gustave died in the game, but he comes back in the other ending, which I prefer. Even though you could say, okay, the Verso ending is putting the characters that I love at peace, it's still kind of, okay, why should... And again, through grief, through loss, I get the motivation part, but I'm not great with, okay, Verso and the Paintress, who kind of, you know, didn't help the situation, let's say, get to live a relatively peaceful life. That doesn't sit right to me, and then the characters that I love don't get to exist anymore. I know there was the other daughter as well, I never quite got, like, connected to her. I suppose that was the thing, is that this family of five, the two daughters, Verso and then Paintress and Renoir, while I understood what they were doing, and that was very, very important, I never kind of, like, I was always sitting on the way of, okay, if I get to choose to say bye to them and to keep the characters I love around, I'm going with that because I don't want the other ones to be around. I was reading through a few different comment sections and things like that, and people were pointing out that with the Verso ending, that, okay, what about if Renoir / the Paintress get the urge to start painting again? Because there's still the grief and loss there, because they're still saying goodbye to those other people, Verso's still dead. And although you've agreed to stop painting, what about if you start again and then the whole cycle will start all over again? Whereas, because if you get rid of the Paintress and you get rid of Renoir, which I think that's what happens in Mael's ending, at least they can try to live somewhat of a life in the painted thing. Because while it's fake, it's still... you can still try and find happiness there at least. And like Gustave is back and that's happy, and his girlfriend, whose name I can't remember because she's right at the start of the game, she, like, you know, came back, and that was very good. The only kind of... again, you got the fake thing there, but okay, the only problem with that, and again, I didn't... when it comes to Verso, and it's like, okay, he's condemned to a life of... he's lost his love for music, but he's still going to try and do music, and there's the darkness there. Again, he was kind of part of the problem, wasn't he? They, like, he kept those secrets and all that sort of thing. So, because I chose the Mael ending, did that boss fight and all that kind of thing. And then I watched the other ending on YouTube to see what it was. And while it is sad in both versions to see either Mael holding Verso, and he's like, I don't want this, I don't, you know, and it's all bad, and he's kind of dusting away, that was hard to watch. But genuinely found it even harder with Mael when it was like she was getting, as I say, dusted. So, again, they both got their pros and cons. I just think that the Mael one slightly edges it for me. And I'd rather have Mael living some sort of decent life, you know, with Gustave there and Lune's there. And I think it was Skiel. And Eske was also there. So he's still around, which is great. I'd still rather have that than the other lot get peace, or some sense of peace, and my favourite characters don't exist. So yeah, that's what it, that's my thoughts on those bits. Is there anything else spoilery I want to talk about? Obviously, Gustav's death was one of the big points of the game, but glad he came back, so that kind of, it didn't undo that, because I was like, oh, Gustav's dead, you know, I didn't know about the whole painting thing and how that worked at the time. So there was that. Any other big bits to talk about? Because, yeah, to me, it all just boils down to, here's the story, here's the twists and the turns, but it boils down to this ending and the choice after the reveals. So, yeah. What else do I want to talk about in the spoiler section? No, I really kind of just wanted to focus on the ending, I guess. I ended up liking the, you know, the paths of the characters, those sorts of things. I thought the reveals of, again, Verso's lies and everything was pretty good, and how that affected things at the camp. Thought that was done really well. Again, writing, performing, acting, just top of the game. Yeah, pretty much it to me. Yeah, again, any feedback, any things I've missed, any things I've not talked about, whether it's story stuff, gameplay stuff, mechanics, anything else like that, let me know. Yeah, through the feedback methods I've already told you that you can do. Anyway, that's Expedition 33, phenomenal game, game of the year, and probably one of the top five games of this generation, indeed. And although we probably won't get a sequel, because how would you do that? Unless you do an expedition but with a different number, but then are you doing kind of the same thing with different characters? Would that be a bad idea? I don't know. I see this as more of a one-off, and then they'll just go and make something else. Again, hopefully something French and with really incredible music, which I'm sure they will. Because if they all work together as the same team but they make a new game, I'm sure it'll be incredible. But yeah, Sandfall Interactive, one to keep an eye on, certainly, to see what they do in the next 3 to 5 years. I suppose. Maybe end of generation, maybe start next generation. We shall see. Anyways, yeah, again, anything I didn't mention that you want me to talk about, feedback, write that in, all that kind of stuff. And that's it. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you next time. Goodbye.